Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams. And Daniel, good to see you today.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Very good. There's a little bit of excitement over in Iraq. It looks like some people are declaring victory, grand victory. I've been waiting for this. But I guess when you look between the lines on those who declare great victories, you find out that the victory isn't all that great. They've been doing that for a while. You know, there was a time when we had a president when they'd have a token victory somewhere, mission accomplished, but nothing ever is accomplished. So this is another mission accomplished. And unfortunately, it's the claim that the forces that we support and the Iraqi government has taken back Mosul. After all these years, they're finally reclaiming a major city. And that doesn't mean they have all the cities taken back from ISIS. ISIS still is there, although greatly weakened. So the fact that ISIS has been removed is one thing, but if you add up the costs, it becomes a little bit more complicated than that, because if you want to look and find out who really won on this, that's where it's difficult. The Iraqi people didn't win. They're claiming that Abadi, the prime minister, won, and he has this victory. And of course, the general Townsend, who's in charge of the area, was saying everything went well. Trump has praised them for this wonderful job, but there's a few people who have lost long term. All you have to do is think about the city. Wonder what the city gained. Did they gain their freedom, or did they lose something else?
Well, a million civilians fled Mosul, that's for one. But, it does recall Peter Arnett, if you remember, in Vietnam. There's a famous part where he reported a U.S. U.S. major saying it was necessary to destroy the town in order to save it.
Yeah.
And I think even though that's somewhat apocryphal, I think that probably describes what Mosul looks like. We actually have a couple of pictures when we get them up of what a liberated Mosul looks like.
Yeah, it doesn't look very liberated, I guess.
Yeah, and here we have, this is virtually uninhabitable. We have a couple more that are just, that really tell the tale of how horrible it is. Amnesty International, we caught this, both of us caught this on Anti-War this morning. Thanks to them. But Amnesty International has got a new report out where they say that the U.S.-led coalition in Mosul has blatantly violated international law in the way they bombed the city and possibly has committed war crimes. Amnesty says that claims that just from February to June this year, 5,805 civilians have been killed in Mosul. That's a huge number.
And I think they, try to present these figures as factual as possible, because they said it wasn't one side that did it. Both sides were doing it, and they weren't precise. But, Townsend tried to defend the position that our forces, our trained forces, did a very good job in trying to and avoiding civilian casualties.
Most precise campaign in the history of warfare, is what General Townsend said. But that 5805 was from the U.S. side. You add in the numbers that ISIS killed, and obviously they're killing a lot too. You have an even higher number.
When we look at those pictures, and I think we probably have some more, when I look at them, I think, and I remember a long time ago making a statement, but it continues to be a correct statement. When we go in and there's destruction, we pay for the bombs to blow it up, and sure enough, we'll probably have to pay to rebuild it. There's already a request they need immediately, and I don't even know how it's going to help immediately with that chaos. They need $1 billion immediately to help rebuild this city. And they have some other rebuilding to do. An astounding statistic is during the taking over of the city, this major battle, the forces that the Americans support lost 40% of their fighting force that was trained, that we spent billions of dollars on probably training. They lost 40%.
Wow.
So guess what the solution to that is? We need another $1.5 billion to train more.
To train more
people. And that'll help solve that problem. I mean, they never learn.
These military adventures are a gift that keeps on giving to the military-industrial
right.
complex. It's incredible. Well, the Amnesty report also talks about, this is kind of interesting, because it criticizes the U.S.-led coalition for, quote, using imprecise explosive weapons in densely populated civilian areas. I think if you change that term a little bit, it sounds a lot like barrel bombs, which we acclaim that Assad is doing. So we're doing this sort of the same thing. We're just dropping a big bomb in the middle of a civilian area and killing a lot of people. I wonder how that's going to make the hearts and minds of Iraq feel about the U.S.
And then there's been charges that some of this activity was not following international law, but our side defend, oh, no, everything is, we follow international law. I don't believe this whole operation that we're involved in is following international law. I mean, we're in a country that we shouldn't be in, but it certainly doesn't follow American law. You know, we've been fighting a war. It used to be thought that you should have a declaration, but it just goes on and on. It never stops. And the Congress keeps voting the money. They don't really challenge it. The American people basically aren't paying much attention. Most of their lives aren't affected, you know, by this particular war. So it goes on. But following law and being precise and protecting civilians, there's a lot of demagoguery going on here. And you know, the casualties and all that were going on, they knew them, but both sides sort of, you know, the Iraqis and the Americans wanted to keep those numbers down because sort of like, you know, some of the figures that came out of Vietnam that was negative. So they try to keep this these figures away. But now the truth is coming out what the real cost is. And, you know, if you look for victors in a thing like this, there are none. Who won? Who possibly could you argue won? I think the only thing goes on who lost the least,
yeah.
You know, and one major loser for this, even though they're not quite aware of it, is the American people. You know, yeah, you pay to blow them up, you pay to rebuild them, and and we pay in also, I think, in military operations, in the sense that yes, we're strong and tough, and we have these weapons, but I think we do lose our credibility because we get involved in things that there are no victories, and you know, there's quite a bit of difference between the victory of World War II. We could go back all the way and question all those wars, but at least they were declared. They knew who the enemy was, and they knew it was when it was over. But now this is ongoing. It's perpetual war for perpetual peace. You know, it's always for peace, and you got to burn the cities to save the cities, and it never seems to say, hey, let's stop and think about this. And, you know, I suggest that maybe the one thing you should think about, if this is another mission accomplished and it never seems to help, why not come home?
Yeah. You know, I do read a lot of the comments that come up, people that watch the show, and I appreciate it. There are a lot of very insightful comments. It's actually particularly interesting to see some that come on and comment who really buy the neocon line, the Pentagon line. And I can sort of hear them now in my mind saying, well, Ron, what is your problem? Don't you think we need to defeat ISIS and Mosul? You know, I think that would be their challenge to both of us. You know, shouldn't we have done it?
Oh, yeah, and that's it, because the one thing is they don't want to see past the immediate problem, which is the symptom of the big problem, and that is foreign policy and foreign intervention. So this is the trick they play. They play this in economics, too. Yeah. You know, you don't want to have total socialized medicine, so you don't care about children not having medical care. Not, you know, realizing the opposite is the case. The government destroys medical care once it tries to take it over. That's what happens here. That if you don't support these wars, then you support, you know, the terrorists. Mm-hmm. And they, of course, accuse me of that in the base. That means you take your orders from Bin Laden. Oh, sure, we take our orders from Bin Laden. But they do, of course, on purpose. It's demagoguery. It's a distortion of the truth. And they're trying to gain the moral high ground. But and I think that's what we don't do a good job on, is pinning them with this whole idea idea of who does have the moral high ground. And the longer it goes on, see, in Vietnam, they finally realized we didn't have the moral high ground. And the American people were outraged and they rebelled in the streets. I mean, we complain about what's happening today, but all you have to do is refresh our memories about 1968 in the 60s. People finally had it. And the whole thing was we didn't have the moral high ground. But this stuff goes by too often and is hidden. But it has just as much negative effect on us long term, financially and spiritually, and the whole works. That what it does to a culture when we support these positions and just blindly accept it.
You know, it's chilling. You mentioned the Vietnam and how the public opinion turned against it. Well, a lot of that had to do with the fact that at the time, the mainstream media was reporting what was happening. They were reporting all of these civilian deaths. They were reporting on all these American deaths. But now what's chilling is that this has really changed. And they're not reporting on civilian deaths. And you have to go to foreign media to get reports on civilian deaths in Mosul. Only the good news story, only the press releases from the Pentagon do you see. But here's something interesting that I noticed in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago. It was out that the U.S. military is also changing the way they report civilian casualties. They no longer make an effort to investigate civilian killings where they're bombing, and they also will no longer report when U.S. planes kill civilians. So even if we actually had a free media here that was interested in looking behind these things, they no longer get the information anyway, so we just won't know.
Well, you have to worry about the collusion. There's always a collusion. It's a collusion with Republican leadership, a collusion with Democratic leadership. It's a collusion with government pronouncements. It's a collusion with the media. And the people end up with not very much information. Fortunately, there's still a way where some of the truth can leak out. And we're looking for those little openings for the truth to leak out, for the people to understand what's going on. But the one thing that they'll have to start talking about, let's say that this fighting quits, but it hasn't quit, there's a ceasefire, and yet even within the city limits they're still shooting and killing, is my understanding, and ISIS is greatly reduced. But that doesn't mean that the groups that created ISIS, the Al-Qaeda's and different people, the people who are dedicated and they believe they have the moral high ground, that we don't like foreigners in our country, they're tired of it. They're still going to exist. That's all of a sudden isn't going to go away. And then there's the old fights. I mean, there's the Al-Qaeda is going to try to express themselves, and the Sunnis will be talking, against the Shia, and the Kurds will be involved. And all of a sudden, some of those things they put aside because they came along, finally, ISIS was something that they didn't really approve of. They were a little bit too tough, and they were too independent, and they had bad PR, so they wanted to get rid of them. But now that they are, these old fights, I think, could start boiling up again.
Yeah, and the other big winner, I think, are the neocons, because you know exactly what's going to happen. They're going to say, okay, look what happened. We went in there, we liberated this country, but all the bad stuff happened because we left too soon. So now that we've liberated again, we've got to never leave. And I bet we're going to start hearing all of our friends on the neocon side say that.
And that's why they need more troops and more spending. At the same time, the great leader of the Federal Reserve, Yellen, had a little bit of talking to do today. And just like all of the Federal Reserve Board chairmen are, it's Congress. You got to quit spending. These debts are really bad. And she was pretty strong on it. She said the things that I could say. She said, this is unsustainable. You can't keep doing it. But do you think that there's going to be a reduction in the military expenditures with this great victory? And, and really, they're coming together on these issues. As much as the media fights with Trump, when it comes to supporting war efforts, and this activity, he generally can get support from some of the Democrats and the media. And there was every once in a while, even the neocons will say, yeah, as long as it's aggressive enough for them, they come together. So that's why this type of policy is not going to do much to cut back any spending. And my argument has been that if we were to work our way out of this financial mess, it would be done by saving money where it would make more sense. And that is not to be the policeman of the world, fighting no-win wars and subsidizing the military-industrial complex, and let that money come back home and go into productive industry for peace and prosperity. But no, it's not going to be cut because it's bipartisan. They want bipartisanship. If they people blindly say, we want bipartisanship, get back there and do that. It depends on what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Yes, we'd like to bring people together for a just cause, but not to promote war and welfare. I mean, that's just almost suicidal under these conditions because, you know, it's unsustainable.
Yeah. And you know what's sad is until the rest of this country wakes up and really demands a change. You know, I'm sure you were looking at Zero Hedge this morning. I was too. So many chilling pieces about the job situation, underemployment, out of the workforce, no longer even counted. All of these people are suffering because of this global empire. Yet they're told that it keeps them safe, and they still haven't been able to make the connections.
Yeah, but the people who get rich over all this, in spite of the negative stuff, they're out there, and of course we've talked about, you know, how precarious it is. But you know, the monetary system is designed to distribute the money to the wealthy, and the wealthy get wealthier. It's not because capitalism fails and we have to become socialists. We have to address this whole subject of the distribution of this new money. But today, with Yellen's testimony, she, you know, was reassuring him. Don't worry too much. She wasn't hawkish today. So those who already have a lot of money, they just made another $1 trillion today because the markets are skyrocketing. But it's all malinvestment. It's artificial. And, of course, the wealthy gets, the rich get richer, and the situation doesn't change because they will not look at the principles of what an economy should be like and whether or not we should have a central bank, what kind of a foreign policy we should have. And they join together and saying, well, we're doing well now and we don't want to leave too soon. And you know the Republicans aren't going to stand up to that. And the neocons, you know, will probably come through this pretty well. Let's hope they're not the biggest winners. But right now, they seem to be able to have a lot of influence on spending and militarism and the military-industrial complex and central banking and all this thing. So that's what we're up to. What do you think we should take away on this little episode that's going on in Iraq today?
Well, there's been a 20% increase in civilian deaths the first 4 months of Trump's presidency versus the final four of Obama's. If Mosul is a preview of Raqqa, then we're really in for a big bloodbath. Let's hope it doesn't happen.
Boy,
that way.
That's for sure, because Raqqa still is in actually worse shape than Mosul. How could it be in worse shape? But at least, you know, ISIS theoretically has been really diminished in Mosul. But like I mentioned so often, it's philosophy that counts. It's policy that counts. If you treat only the symptoms, you don't cure the patient, and you have to understand what's going on. The American people have to wake up and decide what they want. If they think we should be the policemen of the world and we should bomb and bring about havoc in these many countries, and then we have this moral obligation to take care of the problems we created. That's really the disturbing thing. You have this moral responsibility to blow them up and return democracy or give them their democracy, and then when it doesn't work, then we have this moral responsibility to clean up the mess we created. Well, there's a certain limit to all that, and I just am so convinced that the world can be so much better off if we took a completely different attitude, that we be strong, we defend our country, but we have some values that would set standards for other people, that would create a society where peaceful and prosperous, and we would achieve a lot more in peace than we would in war. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.